It's Monday, March 25th, and on this day 4 years ago, in 2020, New Zealand entered its first level 4 lockdown. That was 4 years ago now. Let's move on. We don't need to dwell on it. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is what's worth talking about. The messages of support for Kate Middleton have come in their thousands after she revealed her chemotherapy treatment. A royal reporter joins us to discuss what happens now for the Princess of Wales. Labour's Chris Hipkins is on the pod to chat tax after his first major speech as leader of the opposition. And our wheelchair rugby team failed to qualify for this year's Paralympics, but the team isn't down and out. Instead, it's looking onwards and upwards and celebrating holding a major tournament in New Zealand. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
In the days since Kate Middleton revealed she's been having chemotherapy, the outpouring of support for the Princess of Wales has been phenomenal. It's been just over 2 months since Kate Middleton underwent abdominal surgery, and the public was first told that she would be taking time off to recover, which, as we know, led to mass speculation and conspiracy theories aplenty. But since her video telling us what she's been going through was released, what's the reaction been? Here once again is royal reporter Ellie Hall, who used to be BuzzFeed News' chief royal correspondent. Ellie, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Ellie, you're in the US. What was the reaction like there to the news and this video by Princess Catherine?
Everything stopped in the US. It was a special broadcast. They interrupted the coverage of a basketball game. So there's a big basketball tournament going on right now in America, and interrupted that. All major news channels just stopped to watch that video. And I think that it really showed how much, no matter what we say, how much we really do care about the royal family and about Kate in particular, just because she's already so popular. And then to see that video and her bravery and the emphasis on the fact that she's a mom, I know lots of people cried.
Does this video now then put to bed any and all of that speculation, rumor, and conspiracy theories?
All except the craziest people. You see, I can't give you a firm answer because I did have done a little poking around online. And yes, there are some people who still think that it was AI generated or something like that. But this video, and even the way she didn't comment on any of the craziness and in fact thanked people for their support, I thought was very classy. And I thought that was also a rebuke to everyone who's been doing this sort of not very nice speculating. One of the first tweets that I saw as soon as the video aired, as soon as they posted it on Twitter, was someone saying, "Wow, we're a bunch of," and then bad word right there. And yeah. I think a lot of people felt that way. I think many people who had been making tongue-in-cheek jokes, and we saw this, a few American celebrities who had made fun and posted jokes like going to find Kate, stuff like that, put apology messages up saying, "Wow, I really wish I hadn't done this. I'm sending all my prayers to Kate and her family." And I think a lot of people were feeling a little chagrined.
Given what we know now, do you believe Kensington Palace handled this the right way?
What I said in the last podcast about William and Kate running the show of the PR, I think this proved the accuracy of that. And again, your PR team is only as good as how much you listen to them. And I really think that dealing with this, William and Kate have been trying to deal with this as a family, their children first, deal with it privately. And that's completely understandable, but they are the future king and queen and they're in a bit of a different role. So this speculation that happened, I don't know if you saw this, but a royal reporter, it was two or three royal reporters confirmed that William dropping out of the memorial service had to do with Kate's diagnosis. I have heard that that might have been when she started her chemotherapy,
right?
But I'm not entirely sure on that. But it was something along those lines, and that was the thing that really kicked off the speculation. So knowing that, it seems even crazier. But I do think there was a way that this could have been rolled out, that they could have said something, not her diagnosis earlier, but said, you know, were tests are being done, she's recovering, because there was nothing and nothing. And then there was the photo. And the photo, no matter how you feel about what people were saying online, there no one can argue that the photo debacle was exactly that. And what's more, I've seen a lot of people online a little angry at Kensington Palace for Kate taking the fall for that. I saw someone say, wow, you made the lady with cancer take credit for the bad Photoshop, which doesn't seem that great when you know the cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, exactly. It is still quite bizarre to come to terms with. What happens now, Ellie? What do we know about Kate's treatment and her returning to public duties?
Well, we know that it's going to be entirely on her own recognizance, whatever she wants to do. That's what we're doing. The media, I think we are going to see immediately, there will be no coverage of Kate until the time comes when she does her first event again. That was made very clear in the palace briefing to media. It was made very clear they will come down like a ton of bricks on anyone who does anything that violates her privacy. And that includes, you know, following her on the school run, following her to treatments. Anybody who, you know, participates in a market for paparazzi images, or, and even worse, and a lot of people have been wondering if this had something to do with Kate's decision to come forward about her diagnosis, the people who were arrested for looking into her records, idea that her records have been stolen and perhaps they might be sold to members of the media who would then publicize this.
Ellie Hall, Royal Reporter, thank you for taking the time to unpack this all. Goodness gracious me, what a whirlwind time it's been.
It's been crazy. Thank you for having me.
You know, we love to hear from you. So if you ever want to get in touch about anything, something we've talked about on the pod, something you think we should talk about on the pod, if you've got dog pictures you'd like to send me, flick us an email, newsable@stuff.co.nz. Labour leader Chris Hipkins has made it absolutely clear his party will consider changes to New Zealand's tax system. He said as how people work and live continues to change, reform of the tax system will be an economic necessity. The man himself is with us now. Chris Hipkins, thank you for being here.
G'day.
How are you going to decide what tax changes are necessary?
We've got to make sure that the tax policy that we go into the election with fits with the other policies that Labour will be developing. So we need an overall economic approach that helps us to grow the economy, make New Zealand a richer country, but also make sure that the people who help to generate that extra growth and that extra wealth, the people who go out and work hard every day, actually experience the benefits that come from their hard work. And I think, you know, there's a lot of New Zealanders at the moment who feel like they're working really hard, but they're not able to get ahead. Tax is only one part of that. You know, we've got to look at our policies around, you know, wage and salary earners, how we make sure that they're earning more and that they're getting a higher standard of living. Our tax policy will have to fit with overall, you know, plans around government spending and around investment in public services and so on. So we will decide on an overall package and everything will need to fit together.
Jacinda Ardern ruled out a capital gains tax under her leadership. You ruled it out under any government you led. I know that after the election you said all things were back on the table, but what is it that has changed that has made you want to put tax back in the chat?
I actually never ruled out changes to the tax system as long as I was leading the Labour Party. I said very clearly that each term I'd set out what our tax policy for the following term was. And so at the last election, we didn't campaign on a wealth tax or a capital gains tax. And it was very clear that we wouldn't implement one after the election. But I also said that each election we would revisit that and that we would determine our policy for the following election. And that's what we're doing now.
Would you stake your position as leader on introducing some form of wealth tax?
Oh, I'm not going to predetermine what the outcome of our discussions around tax is, but I think we do need to have them. And I go into this debate, this discussion, with a pretty open mind. I think our tax system does need reform. It is pretty unbalanced in the sense that salary and wage earners, people who pay their tax contribution through PAYE, are disproportionately paying more compared to people who have other forms of income. And we need to make sure that we consider how best to deal with that.
Why wasn't that balanced out, though, while Labour was in power?
Well, you know, we looked at a range of different options during our time in government. A variety of things happened. You know, we had a three-way coalition for our first term in government. Then we had a global pandemic to deal with in our second term. So, you know, that was then and this is now. I think what's important is that we take the time that we've got in opposition now to develop a better policy approach for the next time.
You've rounded on the values of the current coalition government. They did win the election and Labour lost a huge amount of support. They do have a mandate, don't they?
the policies the current government are implementing aren't necessarily the policies that they went to the electorate with. They didn't say they were going to wind back our world-leading smoke-free legislation. In fact, they said the opposite. They said that they were going to support it. Now they've rolled it back in order to raise extra revenue from tobacco to fund tax cuts. So I think New Zealanders have a right to be questioning whether the change that they voted for, and they did vote for change, whether that change is the one that they thought they were voting for.
Do you think the coalition of National ACT and New Zealand First will last the whole term?
This is the most unstable government that we've had since MMP was introduced. They don't seem to be on the same page on very many issues. And in fact, they don't even seem to know what the other, the left hand doesn't seem to know what the right hand's doing in many cases. So I think, they're going to struggle to hold it together and to deliver any kind of meaningful change for the country.
Are you predicting a snap election?
It'd be very bold to make that prediction. I'm certainly not doing that. But I do think they'll struggle to provide good, sound, stable government to the country over a three-year term.
Will you be focusing on building a united opposition with the Greens and Te Pāti Māori, or are you more interested in Labour standing out from the others in opposition?
We've got a really strong, united, stable and cohesive Labour team in Parliament, and my job as leader of the Labour Party is to make the most of that. We do have a constructive relationship with the Greens and Te Pāti Māori. I indicated at the last election those are parties that we could work with in government. But in opposition, there's always a bit of a state of co-opetition. You're cooperating and competing at the same time, and that's the nature of the democratic process.
I don't think I've ever heard the word co-opetition before, so thank you very much for introducing me to that. Who is the leading voice of the left? Is it Chris Hipkins or Chloe Swarbrick?
Well, the Labour Party is the largest opposition party in Parliament, and we are a team, and we're a strong team. And so our job is to make sure that we do present a compelling alternative to the current government.
So Chris Hipkins is the leading voice of the left.
Well, I am the leader of the opposition.
While I have you here, you have met the Prince and Princess of Wales at official occasions that you attended as Prime Minister. What was your reaction to Kate's diagnosis?
I was really sad to hear that the Princess is having to go through that, and I think that all New Zealanders will be, wishing them well. Cancer is a pretty horrible thing for anyone to have to go through, and I think that solidarity, I think that they have shown with others who are suffering from cancer, I think was really nice. I'm sure anybody whose life has been affected by cancer, whether it's their own or somebody else's, will be feeling for them at the moment.
Labour leader Chris Hipkins, kia ora, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Did you know New Zealand, Upper Hutt to be specific, just held an International Paralympic Games qualifying event? It was super thrilling. We're just about to meet one of the people who competed. And so to make sure you never miss out on news like that, chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform, because it'll make sure every new episode of Newsable is delivered straight to your phone. I'm beginning to sound like a broken record here, but wowee, what a weekend of sport. The Warriors clocked up their first win of the season against the Canberra Raiders. The Blues beat the Crusaders, which means the back-to-back Super Rugby Championship winners are still yet to get a win on the board. And in Super Rugby Aupiki, the Chiefs Manawa have taken an unassailable lead to secure a place in the finals. Nobody can catch them. But there was something else going on over the weekend that you may not have known about. In fact, it was a pretty, pretty big deal. Upper Hutt played host to the Paralympic qualifiers for wheelchair rugby, hosting seven different countries as their teams battled it out to make it to the Games. Joining us now is Rob Hewitt, a player and coach for the Wheel Blacks, New Zealand's own Paralympic wheelchair rugby team, for Newsable Sport, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. Rob, great to speak with you, but things didn't go our way, did they?
Yeah, thanks very much. Unfortunately not. Big tournament in New Zealand, which is great. We've been in the NCIS, which is a fantastic venue. Three spots up for grabs, eight teams fighting it out. Nevertheless, we'll move our focus to LA.
How big of a deal is it for New Zealand to host this Paralympic qualifier?
Oh, it's a huge deal. We don't get to play at home very often at all. It's a long way to come for other teams in bigger regions. The Americans and the Europes and all that sort of stuff are nice and close together, so they can just jump over the border and play each other and host tournaments that are more financially viable. So to have a massive tournament of the PQT here in New Zealand has been a huge effort from our governing body.
And what sort of support did you get from the public, from Upper Hutt locals?
Oh, We love any support. Like I say, we travel a lot, so we get the odd family members that can come, but the support has been amazing. All our families and, you know, school children and people popping their head in, and the sports teams here, like the Phoenix and that, and the Hurricanes and all that sort of stuff have been there to support, and we're just honoured to have that support.
I managed to actually catch quite a few of the matches live last week. They were on Sky, but then also streaming on YouTube. Super fun to watch. For those who don't know anything about wheelchair rugby, though, Rob, can you quickly explain how it works?
Yep, we can. Rugby's a broad term. I mean, we get asked a lot, oh, how is it played on grass in a wheelchair? No, it's not like that. It's played in on a basketball court, and it's kind of a mix of demolition derby, chess, and American football. You've got four players on the court. They've got a varying degree of function. Each player has a classification, and those four players can add up to 8 points of classification value.
And it's very high speed, isn't it?
Absolutely, yep. It was invented in Canada by spinal cord injured people for spinal cord, but now there's a whole lot of differently affected people playing, which makes the game sexy and fast.
And Rob, what's next for the Wheel Blacks? You mentioned LA.
Yep. After a hiatus in the Paralympics, we represented in Tokyo, which was an amazing experience. Aiming again for Paris. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. So, yep, we have to focus on the next four-year cycle.
Rob Hewitt, player and coach for the Wheel Blacks, thank you for joining us for Newsable Sport, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. Now, taking a look at the rest of the week coming up, you can catch all Super Rugby games on Sky next weekend, of course, and on Wednesday, you can catch the opening round of the Sals NBL live on Sky Sport and stream on Sky Sport now from 5:30 p.m. Sky Open will also have live free-to-air coverage of the Wellington Saints, the Auckland Tuatara from 3 p.m. Sunday. Which reminds me, I need to get tickets to the Wally Saints home games and also any of the next Canes home matches. I've turned sport mad. 15-year-old theatre mad Imogen wouldn't know me today. That is Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. Oh, and happy short week. Can't believe it's taken me all episode to tell you that. How do we get there?
If you like this podcast, please support our work. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.